Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Parents want to do everything we can to protect our kids, and so knowing that the vaccine is safe in this younger age group, the 5 to 11 group, and also knowing that it appears to be effective, at least based on antibody response. We know thus far for adults that the antibody response does correlate with effectiveness in preventing disease. We do want to see those data eventually, but I also think that it's important for Pfizer to submit to the FDA soon, and for us to get more information about when this vaccine can be made available. I think that timing is going to be really important for so many parents, especially coming into the cold winter season.
What? What the heck is she talking about? Mark, great to be with you again. InformedDissentMedia.com. Another great episode. And we open with a soundbite that makes absolutely no sense at all. What the heck is she talking about?
God only knows.
You know, here's the thing. We're asking the wrong question. I'm not interested in Pfizer's perspective on is there a good antibody response in children? Is there very limited safety studies in kids? Does it show that it's safe? That's meaningless. It doesn't matter. It's not important. What's important here is kids are not at risk of COVID, period. Why are we introducing a vaccine in children without long-term safety studies? I mean, years worth of studies, like a vaccine normally comes to market, takes 3 to 5 to 7 years. Why would we introduce a vaccine under emergency use authorization for children that are not even at risk of getting or having a bad outcome from COVID? I mean, the CDC's own data shows us that. For goodness sake, is this thing on? My goodness, is anybody listening? The CDC's own data, if you're less than 18, survivability of COVID, 99.997%. I have taken care of many children that have gotten COVID. They do really well. It is so rare that you even need to do anything with them other than give them chicken soup and keep them home. They bounce back quickly, and very, very rarely do they have complications. Why on earth would we put a needle in their arm against a disease that they're at very, very low risk of, in particular with a vaccine that has no long-term safety studies? What could be the consequences a year, 5 years, 10 years from now when these kids go and they want to get married and have children and so forth? We just don't know. And this nonsense that people are just parroting from Pfizer and the other companies, well, there's good antibody response, so far it shows good safety, and we need to vaccinate the children and protect the children. It just makes no sense at all. It angers me. It angers me to hear somebody like this speak.
Well, I'm sure that birth control pills are 100% effective in pre-pubertal children as well, but why would we be testing them on that age group? It's largely appropriate that Dr. Laura Wen, the former shill for Planned Parenthood, would be pushing something like this, and she doesn't seem to care about unborn babies. She doesn't really care much about them after birth either. This push to vaccinate children with a gene therapy medication, which isn't even a vaccine to begin with, for a disease that does not in any significant degree harm them, much less hospitalize or kill them, is an all-out propaganda campaign to take control, wrestle it away from parents and doctors and those who actually are entrusted with the care of their children, and put it in the hands of the federal and state governments. It is the antithesis of what America is founded on. It is harmful to children. It's a medical abomination. It's unethical. It violates absolutely every standard that we are asked to honor and protect. And it's rather disgusting that a woman who calls herself a physician is supporting and advocating for such a position.
You know, people ask me all the time, what is the motivation behind somebody like Dr. Wen, or what's the motivation behind a pharmacist that refuses to dispense a potential life-saving medication like ivermectin? Or what's the motivation behind pushing these vaccines independent of and in lieu of early treatment? And I don't always know the answer to that. I'm just not sure what the answer is, but it doesn't make sense to me what we're doing. We're going down a path, and the last large group of unvaccinated people really are our children. And it's hard not to believe that there isn't some financial motivation behind this push to vaccinate our children. And, you know, we need to remember, too, that these vaccine companies are immune from all liability. So if they get it wrong, there's no consequences except to the children. You know, it's interesting. I think it was last week that Pfizer, of all companies, quietly pulled a drug that's been on the market for about 10 years for smoking cessation called Chantix. And I went back in time and I looked up some of the advertisements and some of the narrative when Chantix was first approved. And it's the exact same thing. You have Pfizer saying about how wonderful it is, how it helps people that are trying to stop smoking, and that it's perfectly safe in all the studies that brought it to market. And then, of course, the FDA approves it. And it was pulled from the market after about 10 years because it was discovered that it causes cancer. And so here's a drug being used for smoking cessation. Now, you know, certainly people should stop smoking if they're cigarette smokers, no doubt about it. And the argument is, well, you know, the risk of the drug maybe is less than the risk of getting cancer if you're a smoker. But the point is that we don't always know when a drug is approved what it's going to be like and what it's going to look like a year or 10 from now. And especially when we're talking about medications for our children or vaccines, or in this case, gene therapy for our children, without long-term safety studies, how can you make the leap and say under emergency use authorization? And remember to our listeners that emergency use authorization is a shortcut in the process of bringing a drug or a vaccine to the market. There's a standard process that goes on that requires years and years of studies, years of reviewing of the data before the FDA finally gives a thumbs up to bring a new product to market. And the concept is, but it's such an emergency that we must bypass the normal plan and the normal measures because there's such a compelling reason to do this urgently. I get the argument for adults, although I don't agree with it, and we've talked about that. Because we have excellent early treatment, there really isn't any need to authorize something under emergency use. But especially in children, where it's documented, it's not hiding, it's right in plain sight, the numbers are clear, that children simply are not at risk. If you look at the CDC's own data, and while you're listening, Google this. Google it. CDC. COVID-19, deaths per age, and you'll see the numbers are incredibly low, the number of deaths in children. It's almost a statistical blip. Now, that's not to say that any child that dies, whether it's COVID or any other reason, it's not a great tragedy. It is, but almost every kid that dies from COVID has a significant underlying health condition. And for the average healthy kid, they simply are not at risk. And for the FDA or Dr. Nguyen or any other person to make the case and to push this on our children under emergency use of all things, I think is criminal. I mean, what happened to the first do no harm concept in medicine? Clearly, that's not being used with vaccinating children against COVID-19.
I think they threw it out. As you're talking, I'm thinking about stories that my father told me when he was growing up, where children were literally dying from polio, and his friends were put into iron lungs. They couldn't breathe on their own without assistance. Pools were closed. Children were kept at home. They were locked away. Nobody really knew how it was spread. They just knew that it was killing children. And at that time, it made sense to vaccinate children because children were dying in droves. Where are the dead children now? I don't see them. I don't know them. I don't know a single child under age 18 or someone who knows a child under 18 that died as a cause of the Wuhan virus or one of its variants. Not a single one. And yet here we are following the guidance and soon-to-be mandates from the federal and state governments, including that of our own state warden, Warden Newsom, who against all godly instincts has survived the recall election, who just announced in the last couple of days that he is going to mandate vaccinations for all K through 12 students in the entire state of California. This is where we're going. And yet the children are being harmed more by masks and distancing and Zoom school than they are by this virus. There's an article that was just published yesterday, which was a summary in the not the Babylon Bee, which is a news organization, not the satirical Babylon Bee, that described how this coming fall and winter, respiratory illnesses are expected to skyrocket in children due to the suppression of their immune systems following nearly 2 years of lockdowns, distancing, hypersanitation measures, and masks. When you shut down a child or an adult's ability to activate and use and test and strengthen the immune system, it actually causes the opposite of what you intend. It causes a rebound of infection. And that's where we're headed into this fall and winter. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about real disease and real death in children. We're talking about fantasy disease and fantasy death from a virus that doesn't affect children. And that's why we're giving them all experimental gene therapy products that have no safety testing, that have no need or meaning in children, and that have unknown consequences that could cause them irreparable harm for the rest of their life. It's just simply unconscionable.
No question. As a matter of fact, it's not fantasy illness. We're creating illness. We are actually creating illness in children by what we're doing and what we're asking our children to do. So you know better than anyone, as a result of the lockdowns, as a result of keeping our children home, as a result of forcing our children to wear masks, we are actually creating illness in our children where it didn't exist before, or where it existed at such a low level and now it's gotten a lot worse. And what specifically I'm talking about is anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, and learning disorders that we have directly caused as a result of our behavior. It reminds me, maybe you had this experience. I remember when I was in medical school and we'd rotate through a pediatrics rotation, and almost everybody that starts their pediatrics rotation ends up getting sick. Coughs and colds and so forth, because you're putting your immune system in an environment that it's not used to being in, where you got a lot of snotty nosed kids and so forth, and you're exposed to that, and you immediately come down with colds and coughs and runny noses and so forth. But then after a few weeks of that rotation, you're up and running, and now your immune system is stimulated, it's charged up, it's ready for the battle, and you no longer get sick. And then the next group of residents or medical students rotate into the pediatric ward, and sure enough, they often get colds and get sick. So the same thing is happening here. We're purposely keeping kids home. We're separating them. We're preventing them from interacting with each other. We're over-sanitizing them. I mean, you should buy stock in Purell. And it's not helpful. It's harmful. Our immune system needs to be stimulated. We need to be exposed to the millions of microbes that are in our lives, in the dirt, in the environment, around each other. And when we do so, we strengthen our immune system. We don't weaken it. Think about going to the gym. You know, the first few days at the gym, the first week, you're really sore because your body isn't used to working out. And then when you're in the routine of working out on a daily basis or every few days, then your body grows strong and you no longer get sore. Our immune system is very similar to that. It needs to be stimulated. It craves that stimulation, that exposure. And I agree with this article. I think we're going to see that as we open up schools, as we allow kids now to be re-exposed to some of these germs that we prevented them from being exposed to, we're going to see an increase in respiratory illness and coughs and colds and the like. And sure enough, you know what's going to happen? Now we'll be told about, you know, they need to mask, and this is the reason they need to mask. And not only do they need a COVID shot, but they must now be mandated to get their flu shot this year, which the new batch of flu shot just came out. All the offices have it. I'm starting to see it now advertised in the pharmacies, and that's what we're going to be pushing. We're pushing flu shots. We're pushing COVID shots. We're pushing the over-sanitization of schools. I've seen some schools advertise that they have these new mega filtration devices and infrared light devices to kill everything that possibly could infect our children. I don't think it's a healthy thing to do. I think it's actually just the opposite. The science in this case is going to harm our children, not help our children, especially when we talk about the vaccination.
I saw an episode years ago of the TV series Family Ties with Michael J. Fox, and his character's name was Alex P. Keaton. And someone came to his home one day and said, "Alex, why is it that your father never exercises?" And his response was, "He sees his body like a machine. The less you use it, the longer it lasts." I always remember that line, and it came to mind just now as you were talking, because that's exactly how the immune system works, or rather works the opposite. The less you use your immune system, the longer it does not last. It falls apart immediately. Yeah. And it's also, isn't it ironic that as you're describing what happens in the peds rotation, which exactly happened to me and everyone else I knew in medical school, the same thing happens to teachers. When teachers start working, especially the younger grades, like K through 6, they are sick as a dog for the full year of their first year of employment. I don't know a single teacher that made it through the year without coming down with half a dozen colds and flus and God knows what. It happens to every teacher. That's and then right. By the second year, they never get sick again. I have never once in the last 25 years heard of the idea that a new teacher should quarantine himself and cover himself with a mask and wash his hands and sit 27 feet away from the students in order to protect himself from getting sick from the kids. And if you had proposed that, they would say, well, okay, but what happens next semester? What happens right. The year after that? I mean, at some point, we've got to actually get near the children. We're going to get sick eventually. Why not just get sick now and get over the darn thing? And then we're going to have an immune system that resists infection for the rest of our careers. I mean, it makes such common, obvious sense. And now here we are treating these teachers that already have tremendous, probably one of the best immune systems of any group of people outside of doctors and nurses in the country, because they're around drippy-nosed, sick children all year long, and we're treating them like these little flowers that simply can't engage with children anymore, as if somehow they survived all these years. But this year, just this past year, they suddenly have no more capacity to tolerate an infectious disease. It just, the whole thing just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and of course, most of the teachers are vaccinated as well.
In addition,
they're vaccinated, but that's not enough. The unions and these crazy unelected healthcare bureaucrats now want our children to be vaccinated. You know, it reminds me of that Seinfeld episode. Maybe you saw it. I think it was titled Bubble Boy. And there was this kid that apparently had, no immune system. So he had to live inside a bubble. And Costanza, George Costanza, would go over and visit him. He wanted to be friends with him because he felt bad for this bubble boy. Well, at one point, they get into a fight. And they're kind of swinging at each other through this bubble. And George accidentally breaks the bubble open. And as a result of Bubble Boy...
He bursted his bubble.
That's right. He bursted his bubble. And as a result of the bursted Bubble Boy's bubble, he had a bad outcome. The paramedics come over because now he's exposed to the world and he's getting sick and so forth. Maybe that's what we got to do with the teachers. We got to wrap them all up in bubbles and just completely isolate them. I'm sure that would go well. But, you know, it bodes the question, of course. I get emails now almost every single day and or phone calls every day from a mom or a dad who's got a kid in grade school, and now the schools are asking and putting forward this idea that their children are going to be mandated to get the COVID-19 vaccine, just as they are with the childhood schedule of vaccines in order to attend school. And they're reaching out and saying, what should I do? And of course, my answer is, under no circumstances should a child get the COVID-19 gene therapeutic. It doesn't make any sense from a scientific standpoint. It makes no sense from a health standpoint. And I worry about the long-term consequences. We just don't know what will happen a year or 10 years from now to those children that were vaccinated. We just don't know. So what I, you know, listen, there's enough reason to be upset at schools. Gesundheit. There's enough reasons to be upset at schools besides the COVID thing. And this is sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Again, that this may in fact be the final straw where parents finally throw their hands up and say, I'm done. We're not going to do this anymore. I have to, as a parent, look through the lens of what is best for my child. Period. I can no longer use the excuse of, you know, listen, I have to work. It's difficult having kids home, figuring out homeschooling, figuring out alternatives. It's difficult. It's a burden. They must, like they do in every other situation with their children, ask the question, what is the right thing to do for the kids? And then make that decision. You know, we've got an audio clip that I'd like you to hear. This is from a care worker at a Staten Island. Let's play that. And I think here's a brave woman who is making the right decision.
My kids ask me all the time, like, how are you going to pay for our school? But I know that I'm doing the right thing, because I need to teach my daughter, most specifically, that the government does not tell you what to do.
Exactly. The government should not tell you what to do, period. Yet they are, over and over and over again through this pandemic. They're acting like the tyrannical leaders that many of them actually want to be. And this poor mom, I feel for her. I have many a parent that are in a very similar situation. I don't know what to do. The government is telling me what to do, and I don't want to do this. What is the path forward? Can I get a medical exemption? No, you really can't, with very rare exception. Can I have a religious exemption? It's possible in some school districts, but many won't even look at a religious exemption. And if you do get a religious exemption where you don't have to get the shot, then there's often consequences that go along with that, like you can't participate in certain activities. You have to be segregated from the other kids. You can't play in sports, etc. And so I think ultimately parents have to do what's right for their children. And in many cases, that's a very difficult decision, but they have to do that. And that may mean homeschooling them, or finding a private school, or finding a public charter school that shares your values and will not mandate these ridiculous interventions, whether it be the COVID-19 therapeutic or mandating masking, which is another thing that I just think is completely out of control.
I agree. And I've been saying for over a year to parents who ask me, what do I do if I have to bring my child to school with a mask? What do I have to do if I have to bring my child to a school where he can't sit close to his friends? And they ask me as if it's just a kind of inconvenience that's going to end in a week or a month. And now we know not only is it not just an inconvenience, it's actually potentially life-threatening from a medical point of view and a health concern. And in addition, it's not going to end.
Yeah, no question about it.
It's not going to end. We already know that adults are going to be asked to get booster shots. The next step is for children to be asked or demanded to have the same thing. At some point, as a parent, you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, am I doing what I need to do to take care of my child? And if you can't do that, then you need to take action. How you accomplish that is another question. But how you accomplish that is not the contingent question that you should be asking yourself right now. The primary question is, am I keeping my child safe and well and healthy? And if you can't answer that question with conviction, then you need to do something about it. I say this not in a cold-hearted way. I'm incredibly sympathetic to what this means for parents and what a burden it might be for some parents to have to reorganize their lives around alternative schooling, non-government schools. But what is the alternative? Are you simply going to give your child away to a school system that it's not only a disinterested school system that doesn't care about your child? This is a school system that is actively and knowingly harming your child. How can you look yourself in the mirror and continue to send your child to such a school? It's unthinkable that any parent who cares about his or her child would allow that to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I don't think the schools are purposely trying to hurt children. I just don't think they know any better. And they're so woke and so caught up in the political narrative of the day that they don't really realize what their mandates are actually doing to kids. You know what I think we should do? I love complaining and suggesting solutions, but I'd like to, and maybe we can do this at another episode, is bring a homeschool expert on to teach parents that want to homeschool their kids. How do you actually go about doing that when you make that decision? What is involved from a legal standpoint, from a curriculum standpoint, from a socialization standpoint? How do you successfully transition, if you will, your kid from being in a traditional government school to a homeschool alternative? I'd love to bring that to you. I know a few people that are involved in that movement, and I'd love to bring that to our audience so they can learn how exactly do you go about homeschooling. In the meantime, there's the other path forward is help to make changes at your school board. I know in my local area, there's a recall movement for 3 school board members. In Tustin, Southern California, there's a group of activist parents that are trying to recall several of the school board members there. Run for school board, get involved, recall the school board members if need be, if they're not passing rules and regulations that resonate with the community. They're supposed to represent you, the community member, and if they're not, you either need to remove your kid from that government school or you need to replace the school board members so those school board members represent what the community wants. And so it's really those two strategies. Make a change in the school or remove your kid from the school. Those are really the two options that you have. And hopefully we'll bring you some solutions in one of the next podcasts that are upcoming.
We have a question here from a listener regarding vaccinations. And he's asking this: some vaccinated people who get sick are convinced that the second round of the sickness was so much better than if they had not been injected. Can you address this medical effect of the injection on subsequent infections and the mindset that seems convinced that this injection effect could only have been positive? This is from Tim.
Yeah, obviously, Tim, we don't know because, you know, there's not a control group of, you know, one Tim who didn't get vaccinated and another Tim who did get vaccinated and follow them. There may be some utility to the vaccine in reducing the severity of an illness. But we know that the vaccine doesn't prevent infection. We see that in Israel, where 75% of all hospitalized COVID patients are fully vaccinated. And we also know the vaccine doesn't stop the spread of infection, as vaccinated people can get COVID. They might even have milder symptoms, not realize they have it, and be able to spread it to other people. So listen, you know, I think it's individualized. You need to decide risk versus benefit of the vaccine, risk versus your own personal risk for yourself against COVID. And we'll talk more on another episode specifically about this. Thank you all for listening. informeddissentmedia.com. We appreciate your questions, so please keep them coming. And we will see you next time on an episode of Informed Dissent.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.